This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roll it. Favors takes it strong and one. Oh my. Watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Forum Studios here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. The NBA trade deadline, it has come. Now it is gone, and the Utah Jazz, for the most part, staying pat. I mean, it was a very uneventful day for the Utah Jazz. We are going to talk about the Jazz right now with Dan Clayton. He takes out the time to join us from time to time, editor and columnist with SaltCityHoops.com. Dan, it's been far too long, but it is a pleasure to get you back on today. Thank you.
Always fun to join you, Jordan.
Yeah, it's always fun to talk Utah Jazz basketball with you. I know the trade deadline's an exciting time in the NBA, but if you're a Jazz fan, you were probably more entertained by Ricky Rubio than anything else today.
Ricky was having fun out there on Twitter, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
He was aware that he was central to some of the rumors that the Jazz were involved in, and so he was kind of poking fun at that on social media, making jokes about, hey, my code to get into the practice facility on the keypad still works, and just stuff like that. He's a fun guy. He is a Jazz guy. You know, obviously Utah might have used him today in a deal to get better, but the fact that he's still with the Jazz, it's hard to be too disappointed about that, because he's just a good guy to have around that basketball team.
Now, with that being said, and I agree with you 100%, Ricky Rubio, Derek Favors, that was a rumored package to Memphis, maybe from Mike Conley. I know there were a lot of other rumors out there, if you want to throw Dante Exum into the conversation as well. Dan, are you surprised that the Jazz did nothing today?
A little bit, but when we say did nothing, like, I want to be clear, I think the Jazz were very aggressive today and this week. I think they had offers in for multiple players. Conley was one of them. By the way, I have gotten the sense, and you know, some of this is piecing together things from Tony Jones reporting on The Athletic and from some other sources, I've pieced together, I don't believe the package was ever Rubio and Favors and Exum. I think the package was Rubio and expiring salary that would match Conley's salary. I believe that the Memphis Grizzlies asked for Exum and the Jazz said no. I think that the Grizzlies asked for more draft picks, because the Jazz were willing to include their 2019 first-round pick. Memphis kept asking for more first-round picks, and I believe the Jazz said no to that. So, there's a version of this deal that the Jazz could have gotten done if they were willing to sort of bid against themselves. But the reality is, they were, if you look at what Detroit was offering, you know, a package that was built around a bad contract in Reggie Jackson and a single first-round pick. If you look around at what was out there, the Jazz had the best offer. The Jazz were the best offer on the table. There's no reason for Utah to keep throwing assets on top of the best package that Memphis had. At some point, you just have to, you know, the seller just has to decide if they're selling. And in this case, it sounds like Memphis was kind of in a game of chicken, trying to see if they could get a little bit more out of Utah. And ultimately, Dennis Lindsay decided he wasn't going to be fleeced when he knew he was already the best package sitting there. So, you know, at a level, good on him for not getting fleeced. At another level, it would have been nice to have Mike Conley join his ball club, but the Jazz decided to keep their assets intact and move into the summer.
You know, I do believe that as we get deeper into this Mike Conley contract, obviously it's going to be easier and easier to move, and maybe this is where Memphis is coming off of. I don't know. I mean, if you take a look at Marc Gasol, that's a very valuable contract based on the fact that you got a $25.5 million option next season. It's a player option. They move Gasol. I don't believe that Gasol would decline that $25.9 million option. Conley, on the flip side, next year, he's even that much more desirable if he's still producing at a somewhat similar level, Dan.
Well, he is, but here's the thing with Conley. He has a $32.5 million on the books next year. He has $34.5 million the year after that, which is now, you know, it's going to be fully guaranteed because he's going to hit a games played trigger this year, which determines how much of that salary is guaranteed. You know, plus he has a third of this season remaining. So you're talking about basically $80 million that's still owed to a player who is really good. I mean, he's very good. He's a top 6'7", 8" point guard in the NBA. He's also 31. He's also had injuries in the past that make you wonder how he's going to age and how his game is going to translate into his mid-30s. So, you know, there's a version of this deal, had it gone down, there's a version of this deal that would have worked out really nicely for the Jazz, where they get sort of that third impact player to put next to Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell. There's also a version of this trade, and I was kind of worried about this from the first moment I heard Conley's name mentioned. You know, the Jazz got George Hill at a similar stage in Hill's career, right? Just into his early 30s, had, you know, coming off a few big serious injuries, and the Jazz were excited to have him, and rightfully so, because he was a big name and a great on-paper fit for what the Jazz were doing at the time. But then, as it turns out, the Jazz got him just in time for him to start his decline. And, you know, today, George Hill is a fraction of the player he was just before that trade. And so, you know, I think that there's a little bit of that with Mike, where you're saying, okay, I think the Jazz wanted him. I think they also didn't want to give too much for him on the chance that maybe a couple of years from now he's not quite the same player he is today. And I think that that's the consideration that makes you look at $80 million still owed and be just slightly nervous about how many assets you're going to throw in to get that deal done.
Again, we're being joined right now by Dan Clayton, editor and columnist for SaltCityHoops.com, as we talk the Utah Jazz and the trade deadline. Dan, it seems like it never fails. This time every year, I'm talking about the possibility of Derek Favors being moved. Maybe I'm overstating this, but to me, every year, I look at the Favors deal and I think to myself, this has to be one of the more valuable contracts, one of the more desirable contracts for teams to look at, making a move with. Am I wrong in thinking that? Because I've said this for years, yet Derek Favors' career with the Utah Jazz has nine lives, I guess, because I'm shocked that he is still a member of the Utah Jazz in 2019.
Yeah, coming up on 8 years, the 8 year anniversary of the trade that brought him to Utah from New Jersey. No, you're not wrong. I mean, it's kind of like, look, when he signed that deal last season, a $16.9 million contract with a second year at the same amount but fully non guaranteed. That deal, everything about that deal, the way it was structured, the second year non-guaranteed, everything about that deal said Derek Favors is a trade asset. Derek Favors is a chip that we're going to use in conversations to potentially bring back big salary, because he, with that contract structure, he appeals to teams who want some center help over the kind of medium term, but he also appeals to teams that want basically an expiring salary. You could make him an expiring salary by just not picking up that second year. So, you know, it really seems to me that's one of the reasons why going into this trade deadline, I really thought it was more likely than not that the Jazz would do something or other. Not that, you know, you can't, the reality is you can't go make a team trade you an impact player, right? Like, that's tougher than fans like to pretend it is, because we all, you know, get on 2K and we make our fake trades and we go play on the trade machine and make our fake trades. It's not that easy. You can't, it's not any easier than if I were to walk into your house, Jordan, hand you $500 and say, all right, I own your TV now. I just bought your TV. Like, we don't get to, as humans, make those decisions unilaterally. But Favors, man, the contract he agreed to really seemed to be a contract that screamed trade chip, and yet here he is, you know, about to be an 8 year Jazz man, still the longest tenured Jazz man, and with the club at least through the end of this season.
Yeah, to me, it's kind of shocking. Again, for years, we've been talking about Derek Favors being moved at the deadline. Let's talk about Dante Exum, a name that I think is going to be somewhat similar, especially the deeper we get into the Dante Exum deal, because, you take a look at what he's making this season, 10.6, 10.6 next year, 10.6 the year after that. I think this may be a more common occurring name to pop up around the trade deadline and maybe even the offseason moving forward, Dan.
Yeah, I agree. I will, just as a clarifying point, because I do think this is important in terms of how we think about Exum's value and his contract. The reality is it's a $9.1 million contract in each of the 3 years, with incentives on top that can take it up to about $11 million. So, that's important, because the incentives are for things like about $500,000 a year is for things like participating in the Jazz's summer development programs. Like, that's kind of free money if Exum does what he's supposed to do. But the other $1.4 million in that contract is based on stuff like games played, because obviously, you know, availability has been an issue for Dante, and I don't blame him for that. He's had three separate acute random traumas, and those aren't, you know, that's not a guy's fault when his ankle goes 90 degrees sideways. But there's other stuff in there, like you know, incentives for being an all-defensive first or second team player, an incentive in there for having a defensive rating of under 100 points per opponent possessions when he's on the floor. Stuff like that that basically means if he's making the full value of that contract, it's because he's a really good player. You know, if he's all-defensive first or second team, if he's one of the 10 best defenders in the NBA, the Jazz will gladly pay him $11 million a year. So I think his contract, because of that, is really favorable. It's a contract that basically starts as sort of the mid-level contract tier, the mid-level exception. And if it goes higher, it's because he's doing things and being a basketball asset and being a player that's worth those things. So he'll be an asset. But again, like I said with the Conley thing, you know, the Jazz have had opportunities to put Exum in deals, and they keep saying no. Obviously, there are certain types of deals for which they'd have to consider putting Exum in a trade package. But I think Dennis Lindsay really values Exum and what he could mean to the future of the club.
Dan, before I let you go, you and I did have a conversation off of the air about what this means moving into the offseason for the Jazz. I want you to go ahead and break that down for the listeners. How much money the Jazz may actually have this offseason now that we know this is the roster that's set throughout the remainder of the year, and it's a little north of $40 million if they play their cards the right way. They want to take it that direction.
Yeah, exactly. So the Jazz are going to have some options because they have a few pending free agents whose rights they can either hold on to if they want to re-sign the likes of Ricky Rubio, Thabo Sefolosha, and Epe Udoh, and they have non-guaranteed contracts like Derek Favors, Royce O'Neal, George Niang, and Kyle Korver is only partially guaranteed. So basically, if they wanted to just wipe it clean and create as much cap space as they could let all of those guys walk, and they'd be sitting about $42 million under the salary cap. That's $42 million they could use to sign a player, to absorb a player in a summer trade. They could go into the season with that cap space and look for opportunities over the course of the season to absorb players or sign somebody. So, you know, that represents potentially an opportunity to make the roster better that they wouldn't have had they signed Conley, because Conley would have basically occupied that whole slot and really made it so that the Jazz's core for the foreseeable future was Mitchell, Conley, and Gobert. So, you know, we'll see what that means. Cap flexibility is only valuable to the degree that they're able to do something with it. But the Jazz certainly are going to enter this offseason with a few different ways that they can improve the roster. And you know, we'll see where they go from there.
Dan Clayton, again, joining us to talk Utah Jazz and the trade deadline that never was. Dan, before I let you go, let the listeners know where they can find more of your work and, of course, you on Twitter as well.
Yeah, so saltcityhoops.com is the site that I manage and write at. It's a great site with a lot of unique perspectives and voices coming from great writers on our team. And then I'm on Twitter at DanClate0N. So it's Dan Clayton with a zero for the O.
Dan, I always look forward to talking Utah Jazz basketball with you. Again, thank you very much for the time.
Yep, fun chatting.
Definitely. Again, that's Dan Clayton of saltcityhoops.com talking Utah Jazz basketball. We've got a break for just a moment. We'll come back for the final touches on this Thursday edition of the show when we return live from the Auto Forum studios here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.